in the captain's quarters on the Enterprise.
Dress uniforms, spit and polish.
I don't know how much longer I'm gonna be able to stand this. Feel like my neck's in a sling.
The Vulcans are the last group of delegates we have to pick up. As soon as we get them aboard, we'll be able to relax.
Sure.
Formal reception tonight. 114 delegates aboard for 2 weeks, 32 of them ambassadors, half of them mad at the other half, and the whole lot touchier than a Roy at a matter pile over this Cordon question.
Kirk in.
Shuttlecraft approaching with Ambassador Sarek Spark. The estimate arrival, 1 minute.
Bring him aboard, Mr. Chekhov.
Stand by to recover shuttlecraft. Under guard to the hangar deck.
The shuttle approaches the starship.
Clear hangar deck. Clear hangar deck. Depressurizing. Recovering shuttlecraft.
The Galileo glides slowly through the open doors and settles onto the turntable in the huge tunnel-shaped hangar.
Hangar deck pressurizing.
Outside, a security detail wearing black cummerbunds in addition to their standard red Starfleet tops spruce themselves up. The airlock doors slide open, and the security detail form a guard of honor. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in dress uniform wait to greet the Vulcan delegation. The shuttle doors open.
How does that Vulcan salute go?
Spock raises his hand, his fingers paired in a V-shape.
That hurts worse than the uniform.
A tall Vulcan with the typical slanting eyebrows and pointed ears of his species, his black hair graying, strides past the honor guard and up to Kirk.
Captain James Kirk.
Captain?
He makes the Vulcan salute.
My first officer, Spock.
Vulcan honors us with your presence. We come to serve.
The ambassador turns coldly away.
Your service honors us, Captain.
Thank you. Chief Medical Officer, Dr. McCoy.
Ambassador.
Doctor.
Ambassador Sarek salutes McCoy.
My aides, and she who is my wife.
A woman in a high-collared cloak steps forward.
Captain Kirk?
Our pleasure, madam. As soon as you're settled, I'll arrange a tour of the ship. Mr. Spark will conduct you.
I prefer another guide, Captain.
As you wish, Ambassador. Mr. Spark, we'll leave orbit in 2 hours. Would you care to beam down and visit your parents?
Captain, Ambassador Sarek and his wife are my parents.
Kirk's jaw drops. The ambassador watches, unmoved.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek. Created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Journey to Babel, written by DC Fontana, directed by Joseph Pevney. Kirk leads Sarek and his wife on a tour of the ship. Spock is in engineering.
Captain's log, stardate 3842.3. We have departed Vulcan for the neutral planetoid, codenamed Babel. Since it is in our sector, the Enterprise has been assigned to transport ambassadors of Federation planets to this vitally important council. The issues of the council are politically complex. The passengers, explosive.
This is the engineering section. There are a number of emergency backup systems for the main controls. Over here are a number of control computers.
After all these years among humans, you still haven't learned to smile.
Humans smile with so little provocation.
And you haven't come to see us in 4 years either.
The situation between my father and myself has not changed.
My wife, attend.
She rejoins Sarek, taking his hand formally.
Mr. Spock, a moment, if you please.
Spock's parents don't look up at his approach.
Yes, Captain.
Explain the computer components.
Sarek's cold eyes slide towards his son.
I gave Spock his first instruction in computers, Captain. He chose to devote his knowledge to Starfleet instead of the Vulcan Science Academy.
If you will excuse me, Captain.
Spock leaves the engineering deck.
I'm sorry, Mercer. I did not mean to offend. I thought that...
Offense is a human emotion, Captain. I'm returning to my quarters. Continue, my wife.
He goes. Kirk wrings his hands.
Sarek, I just don't understand.
Amanda, I'm afraid you couldn't pronounce the Vulcan name.
Can you?
Well, after a fashion and after many years of practice, shall we continue the tour? My husband did request it.
It sounded more like a command.
Well, of course. He's a Vulcan. I'm his wife.
And Spock is his son.
Well, you don't understand the Vulcan way, Captain. It's logical. It's a better way than ours, but it's not easy. It has kept Spock and Sarek from speaking as father and son for 18 years.
Spock is my best officer. And my friend.
I'm glad he has such a friend. It hasn't been easy on Spock. Neither human nor Vulcan. At home, nowhere, except Starfleet.
I take it that Spock disagreed with his father on a choice of career.
Oh, my husband has nothing against Starfleet, but Vulcans believe that peace should not depend on force.
Starfleet force is used only as a last resort. We're an instrument of civilization. And it's a better opportunity for a scientist to study the universe than he could get at the Vulcan Science Academy.
Perhaps. But Sarek wanted Spock to follow his teachings as Sarek followed the teachings of his own father.
They're both stubborn.
A human trait, Captain?
Bridge to Captain Kirk.
Excuse me.
He smiles at her and goes to a view screen.
Kirk here.
Captain, I picked up some sort of signal. Just a few symbols, nothing intelligible.
Source?
Well, that's what bothers me, sir. Impossible to locate. There wasn't enough of it. Sensors show nothing in the area, but it was a strong signal as though it was very close.
Go to alert status 4. Begin long-range scanning. Kirk out. Captain's log, stardate 3842.4. The Interplanetary Conference will consider the petition of the Corridon planets to be admitted to the Federation. The Corridon system has been claimed by some of the races now aboard our ship as delegates, races who have strong personal reasons for keeping Corridon out of the Federation. The most pressing problem aboard the Enterprise is to make sure that open warfare does not break out among the delegates before the conference begins.
Mr. Ambassador, I understand you had retired before this conference was called. Now, forgive my curiosity, but as a doctor, I'm interested in Vulcan physiology. Isn't it unusual for a Vulcan to retire at your age? After all, you're only 102.
102.437, precisely, Doctor. Measured in your years. I had other concerns.
Ambassador?
A Tellarite.
Sarek, a Vulcan. Do you vote to admit Corridon to the Federation?
The vote will not be taken here, Ambassador Garf. My government's instructions will be heard in the council chambers on Babel.
No, you! How do you vote, Sarek of Vulcan?
Why must you know, Tellarite?
In council, his vote carries others. I will know where he stands and why.
Tellarites do not argue for reasons. They simply argue.
No! You...
Gentlemen, Ambassador Sarek is quite correct when he points out this is not the Council Chamber of Babel. I'm fully aware that the admission of Corridon is a highly debatable issue, but you won't solve it here.
The Tellarite and the Andorian look at Sarek.
You are correct, Captain. Quite logical.
My apologies, Captain.
You will excuse me.
The pig-snouted Tellarite goes.
Have you met Garf before, Ambassador?
We debated during my last council session.
Ambassador Garf lost.
Spock, I've always suspected that you were a little more human than you let on. Mrs. Sarak, I know about the rigorous training of the Vulcan youth, but tell me, did he ever run and play like the human children, even in secret?
Her eyes sparkle.
Well, he did have a pet salat he was very fond of.
Salat?
It's sort of a fat teddy bear.
McCoy's eyes light up in triumph.
A teddy bear?
Excuse me, Doctor. It's been a rather long day for my wife. Captain.
Ambassador.
Spock's parents leave the reception.
A teddy bear?
Not precisely, Doctor. On Vulcan, the teddy bears are alive, and they have 6-inch fangs.
Bridge to Captain Kirk.
Kirk puts down his glass and goes to the intercom.
Kirk, you.
Captain, sensors are registering an unidentified vessel pacing us.
On my way. All duty personnel on yellow alert. Don't alarm the passengers, Kirk.
He hurries to the bridge. There's a small golden object in the center of the view screen.
Report.
A small ship, Captain. It's been there 5 minutes, remaining outside phaser range at extreme limit of sensors.
Identification spot?
Sensors indicate the size of a scout ship, but configuration is unfamiliar. Most unusual.
Does she answer a hail?
I've tried all frequencies and hooked in the universal translator. No response, sir.
Maintain translator broadcast. Check records for authorized ships.
Starfleet records no authorized vessel in this quadrant except ours.
Kirk glances at the view screen and grins mischievously.
Get a guess what she is?
Yes, Captain. I shall need more data for my estimate.
Mr. Chekov, mark course, intercept that vessel. I want to see what she looks like close up.
Yes, sir.
You embarrassed Spock this evening. Not even a mother may do that. He is a Vulcan.
He's also human.
He is a Starfleet officer.
I thought you didn't approve of Starfleet.
It's not a question of approval. The fact exists. He is in Starfleet. He must command respect if he is to function.
Sarek, you're proud of him, aren't you? You're showing an almost human pride in your son.
It does not require pride to ask that Spock be given the respect which is his due. Not as my son, but as Spock. Do you understand?
Not really, but it doesn't matter. I love you anyway. I know, it isn't logical.
She holds out 2 fingers, which he takes formally but affectionately in his own.
Vessel changing course, heading toward us at high warp speed.
Ready main phasers.
Phasers armed and ready, sir.
Faces tense, the bridge crew watch the view screen. The vessel flashes towards them and vanishes into their wake.
Interesting. They were traveling at approximately warp 10.
Back on original course, Mr. Chekov. Report on intruders' movements.
Captain, Starfleet acknowledges report on our situation and confirms no authorized Federation vessel in this quadrant.
Back on original heading, Captain. The intruder changed course immediately after we did. It's paralleling us again.
Oh, we have a shadow. Faster, more maneuverable, and unidentified. Mr. Spock, full analysis of sensor readings. I want to know who that intruder is.
In a lounge, aliens of all shapes and sizes are socializing. Ambassador Gav, the stocky, pig-snouted Tellarite, sits at a table drinking. 2 blue-skinned Andorians, pairs of antennae peeping out from their silver hair, move away from the buffet table as Sarek comes in. He slips a small pill into his mouth and pours himself a drink. Gav comes up behind him.
Vulcan, I would speak to you.
It does seem unavoidable.
How do you vote on the Corydon admission?
Sarek sips his drink.
You seem unwilling to wait for the council meeting, Ambassador. No matter. We favor admission.
You favor? Why?
Everyone turns to listen.
Under Federation law, Corydon can be protected.
and its wealth administered for the benefit of its people.
It's well for you. Vulcan has no mining interest.
Corridon has nearly unlimited wealth of dilithium crystals, but it is underpopulated and unprotected. This invites illegal mining operations.
Illegal? You accuse us?
Some of your ships have been carrying Corridon dilithium crystals.
You call us thieves?
Gentlemen. Whatever arguments you have between yourself is your business. My business is running the ship. And as long as I command, there will be order.
Of course, Captain.
Understood.
At the door, he turns back.
There will be payment for your slander, Sarek.
Threats are illogical. And payment is usually expensive.
Ambassador Gav goes. Kirk tugs at his dress uniform jacket and looks at Sarek uneasily. Later, a security guard discovers the body of a Tellarite hanging upside down in one of the maintenance tubes. Kirk, bare-chested, is changing in his quarters.
Security to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here.
Lieutenant Joseph, sir. I'm on Deck 11, Section A3. I've just found one of the Tellarites murdered. I think it's the ambassador himself, sir.
How was he killed?
His neck was broken by an expert.
Explain.
Well, from the nature and the location of the break, I'd say the killer knew exactly where to apply pressure to snap the neck instantly.
Who aboard would have that knowledge?
Vulcans. On Vulcan, the method is called Talshaya. It was considered a merciful form of execution in ancient times.
Spark. A short time ago, I broke up an argument between Gav and your father.
Indeed, Captain. Interesting.
Interesting.
Spock, do you realize that makes your father the most likely suspect? Vulcans do not approve of violence.
Are you saying he couldn't have done it?
No, Captain. I'm merely saying it would be illogical to kill without reason.
But if he had a reason, could he have done it?
If there were a reason, my father is quite capable of killing. Logically and efficiently.
Kirk nods gravely and glances at McCoy. In her quarters, Sarek's wife, in a long red gown trimmed with pink fur, opens the door. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy come in.
Mrs. Sarek, I'm sorry to disturb you. I must speak to your husband.
Well, he's been gone for some time. It's his habit to meditate in private before retiring. What's wrong? Spock.
Ambassador Sarek comes in behind them.
You want something of me, Captain?
Ambassador, the Tellarite Gav has been murdered.
His neck was broken, Mr. Ambassador, by what Spock describes as Talshaya.
Sarek frowns and glances at his wife.
Indeed. Interesting.
Yes. Ambassador, where were you during the past hour?
Captain, you're not accusing him.
Mother, if only on circumstantial evidence, he is a logical suspect.
I quite agree.
Then where were you during the hour?
In private meditation, Captain. Spock will tell you that such meditation is a personal experience. Not to be discussed, especially not with Esme.
Well, that's a very convenient excuse, Ambassador.
Sarek, what's wrong?
It's difficult to say with Vulcan physiology, but I believe it's something to do with his cardiovascular system.
Can you help him?
I don't know that yet, either.
He runs his handheld scanner over Sarek's chest and abdomen. Later, on the bridge, Kirk, in the captain's chair, glances anxiously at Spock, who's at his console leaning over the viewer of his scanner. The captain steps up onto the gallery at his side.
Spock.
Yes, Captain. I get sensor readings of tritritanium from the alien ship's hull.
I'm sorry about your father.
Yes, it could adversely affect our mission.
Aren't you worried about him?
Worry is a human emotion, Captain. I accept what has happened.
He sits. Kirk looks at him, bemused.
The ship's hull seems to have a high density level or is cloaked against sensor probes. It is manned, but sensors cannot make out specifics.
I see. Well, the Romulans have nothing like it. Certainly not the Federation or the neutral planets. What about the Klingons?
I think it unlikely it is one of theirs.
Who then?
Captain?
Yeah.
I picked up the last part of a transmission. Just like that other one. I put the recorder and the directional locator on it immediately.
Mr. Chekhov, directional locator indicates source bearing 27 Mark 8.
It's the intruder ship, sir.
Switch recorder to Mr. Spock, station for decode, Lieutenant.
Sir, the directional locator indicates reception point somewhere within the body of this ship.
A personal receiver? Somebody on board is in contact with that vessel.
Possibly, Captain. But I cannot decode this transmission.
Why not?
It is in no known code. There's no detectable pattern. No standard references apply.
Are there any conclusions possible from the information?
Only negative. It fits none of our computer records. And it is alien.
Murder? Somebody out there playing tag? Lieutenant, you've got your sensor located on a wide beam. We've established a receiver on board this vessel. Tighten your field to the interior of the ship.
Yes, sir.
That alien vessel starts transmitting again. I want to know who on board the Enterprise is receiving.
In sickbay, McCoy studies the biomonitor above Sarek's bed. Mrs. Sarek glances at Nurse Chapel as Kirk and Spock come in.
Bones, how is he?
Well, as far as I can tell from instrument readings, our prime suspect has a malfunction in one of the heart valves. It's similar to a heart attack in a human. But with Vulcan physiology, it's impossible to tell without an operation. Mrs. Sarek, has he had any previous attacks?
No.
Yes. There were three others. My physician prescribed benzocidrine for the condition.
Why didn't you tell me?
There was nothing you could have done.
Ambassador, when did you have these attacks?
Two before we left Vulcan. The third, a few hours ago, I was on the observation deck. When the Tellarite was murdered, I was quite incapacitated.
There were no witnesses?
None.
Doctor, do you propose surgery for the heart defect?
Well, I'm not sure. It's tough enough on a human. On a Vulcan, ordinary operations out of the question.
Why?
Because of the construction of the Vulcan heart.
I suggest that a serogenic open heart procedure would be the logical approach.
Yes, unquestionably.
Bones, what about it?
Well, I'm glad somebody's asking me something around here. Well, the procedure they're discussing would require tremendous amounts of blood for the patient.
Doctor.
Yes.
I've checked the blood bank. There isn't enough Vulcan blood and plasma on board to even begin an operation of this type.
There are other Vulcans aboard.
My blood type is T negative. Somewhat rare, even for a Vulcan.
Yes, I'd say that's rare.
My blood is T negative, Doctor.
We've run a number of blood tests on Mr. Spock. It isn't true Vulcan blood either. It has human blood elements in it.
It should be possible to filter out the human factors.
Even you couldn't give that much blood, Spock. It would kill you.
Don't.
McCoy follows Kirk across the room to where the two women are waiting.
Mrs. Sarek, you must understand the chances are extremely small to find a way to produce sufficient T-negative blood.
Indeed. I would estimate the odds.
Please don't.
Spock looks puzzled. Later, he stands beside McCoy's desk as the doctor feeds data files into his computer.
Doctor?
I see it, Spock, but that was Rigelian.
Rigelian physiology is very similar to Vulcan.
Similar is not good enough. It's still experimental.
But it does look promising.
Spock, we would need such great amounts of blood that even if the drug worked on the Vulcans as well as the Rigelian, which I'm doubtful, it would still drain Sarek to a critical level.
I consider the safety factor low, but acceptable.
Plus the fact I've never operated on a Vulcan before. Oh, I've studied the anatomical types. I know where all the organs are. But that's a lot different from actual surgical experience.
So if I don't kill him with the operation, the drug probably will.
What drug, Doctor?
Mrs. Sarek comes through from the ward.
My husband is asleep. What drug?
A chemical stimulant to speed up reproduction and replacement of blood in the body. It's only experimental.
It has been used successfully on test subjects on Rigel 5.
It places a tremendous strain on the spleen and the liver. In Sarek's condition, the stimulant would kill him.
Mrs. Sarek clasps her hands together and turns to look at her son.
Miss Chapel, I underwent a physical examination last week. Would you pull those records, please?
Already pulled. You're perfectly healthy, Mr. Spock.
What has that got to
do? You're going to use it on yourself? A transfusion from you to your father?
It would seem the only answer.
It could damage you internally. It could kill you.
Spock's face is a mask of indifference.
I'm sorry, Spock. I can't sanction it.
And I refuse to permit it. I won't risk both of you.
Then you automatically condemn Sarek to death.
And you, Doctor, you have no logical alternative either.
If you do not operate, Sarek will die. You now have the means to perform the operation. I'm volunteering myself as the blood donor.
McCoy's brow furrows. He turns to look at Mrs. Sarek.
I'll be at my station until you require me.
Spock pointedly hands McCoy the Regalian data file and leaves. On one of the lower decks, Kirk throws a dagger-wielding, blue-skinned Andorian to the floor and grabs his knife arm. The Andorian karate chops Kirk on the neck. He slashes at Kirk with the knife. Kirk knees him in the stomach, springs off the wall and lands on him. Both men gasp for breath. The Andorian stabs Kirk in the back. Kirk throws him over his shoulder and he drops the knife. As he reaches for it, Kirk knees him in the head. The Andorian is out cold. Clutching his back, Kirk staggers to an intercom. He brings his hand away from the wound. It's dripping blood.
Rich, Spock.
Spock here.
I'm on deck 5. Near my quarters. I've been attacked by an Andorian. Security.
His eyes start to glaze over.
Security team.
Captain. Captain. Captain.
Captain's log. Stardate 3843.4. First Officer Spock in temporary command. The captain has been critically wounded by one of the delegates to the Babel Conference. The ship is on alert status. We are still being followed by the intruder vessel.
It's a bad wound. Punctured left lung. A centimeter or so lower, it had gone through the heart.
Kirk is on a bed, his chest bandaged.
I'll be in the brig questioning the Andorian prisoner.
Doctor, the K2 factor is dropping.
McCoy hurries over to Sarek.
Spock.
He pushes past Mrs. Sarek towards Spock.
Your father is much worse. There's no longer a choice. I have to operate immediately. We can begin as soon as you're prepared.
No, Doctor.
Why?
My first responsibility is to the ship. Our passenger safety is by Starfleet order of first importance. We are being followed by an alien, possibly hostile vessel. I cannot relinquish command under these circumstances.
You can turn command over to Scotty.
On what grounds, Doctor? Command requirements do not recognize personal privilege. I'll be in the brig interrogating the Andorian.
He's Telef, a minor member of my staff. I know nothing of him, except that he has served adequately.
He's been subjected to questioning under verifier scan and truth drug. He reveals nothing. I suggest his mind has been so conditioned as part of a preconceived plan.
My people are a violent race, but we had no quarrel with Captain Kirk.
Spock glances at the assassin.
Apparently, Thelev did.
You suggest a plot. How could it profit us to harm the captain?
I do not know. There is no logic in Thelev's attack upon the captain. There is no logic in Gav's murder.
Perhaps you should forget logic and devote yourself to motivations of passion or gain. Those are reasons for murder.
Spock is in his quarters. He straightens up from the computer screen.
Come in.
Spock, you must turn command over to somebody else.
Mother, when I was commissioned, I took an oath to carry out responsibilities which were clearly and exactly specified.
Any competent officer can command this ship. Only you can give your father the blood transfusions that he needs to live.
Any competent officer can command this ship under normal circumstances. The circumstances are not normal. We are carrying over 100 valuable Federation passengers. We're being pursued by an alien ship. We are subject to possible attack. There has been murder and attempted murder on board. I cannot dismiss my duties.
Duty? Your duty is to your father.
I know. But this must take precedence. If I could give the transfusion without loss of time or efficiency, I would. Sarek understands my reason.
Well, I don't. It's not human. Oh, that's not a dirty word. You're human, too. Let that part of you come through. Your father's dying.
Mother, how can you have lived on Vulcan so long, married a Vulcan, raised a son on Vulcan, without understanding what it means to be a Vulcan?
Well, if this is what it means, I don't want to know.
It means to adopt a philosophy, a way of life, which is logical and beneficial. We cannot disregard that philosophy merely for personal gain. No matter how important that gain might be.
Nothing is as important as your father's life.
Can you imagine what my father would say if I were to agree, if I were to give up command of this vessel, jeopardize hundreds of lives, risk interplanetary war, all for the life of one person?
When you were 5 years old and came home stiff-lipped, anguished, because the other boys tormented you, saying that you weren't really Vulcan. I watched you, knowing that inside, the human part of you was crying. And I cried too. There must be some part of me in you, some part that I still can reach.
Spock walks slowly past her, hands clasped behind his back.
Being Vulcan is more important to you. Then you'll stand there, speaking rules and regulations from Starfleet and Vulcan philosophy, and let your father die. And I'll hate you for the rest of my life.
He spins round.
Mother.
Oh, go to him now, please.
I cannot.
She swings back her arm and slaps him. And storms out. Spock goes to follow her. He hesitates and places his hand flat on the door.
Dr. McCoy.
In sickbay, Kirk is coming round.
I'd like to get my hands on the guy with the sledgehammer.
The one who hit you?
Not the one inside my head. How long have I...
Now, let there be a lesson to you. Just lie there and be happy you're still alive.
How's Sarek?
Not good. I can only operate.
What's stopping you? I thought you were already.
I was. When you became injured, Spock assumed command. He's going to stay there till you get back on your feet, even if it costs Sarek his life. Regulations.
I can't damn him for his loyalty. For doing his duty, but I'm not going to let him commit patricide.
Jim, if you stand, you could start to bleed again.
He sits up and gingerly gets to his feet.
Bones, Sarek will die without that operation. And you can't operate without transfusions from Spock. I'll convince Spock I'm all right. And order him to report here. As soon as he leaves the bridge, I'll turn command over to Scotty and report to my quarters. Will that fill your prescription?
McCoy glances at Sarek and nods. A few minutes later, he accompanies Kirk back in uniform to the bridge. Spock, in the captain's chair, doesn't look grand. Kirk comes and stands beside him.
Captain.
I'll take over, Mr. Spock. Report to sick bay with Dr. McCoy.
Captain, are you quite all right?
I've certified him physically fit, Mr. Spock. Now, since I have an operation to perform and both of us are required...
Get out, Spock.
Kirk grins at him. Spock frowns, raises a laconic eyebrow, gets up from the command chair, and goes to the lift.
Mr. Chekov, what's the status of the intruder?
No change, sir. Maintaining its distance.
Any further transmissions, Lieutenant?
None, sir.
Call Mr. Scott to the bridge.
Captain, the alien vessel is moving closer.
Belay that order. I'll stay here.
Captain, I'm picking up the alien signal again. But it's coming from inside the Enterprise.
Specific origin?
From the brig, sir.
Security. Security, to the brig. Search the prisoner immediately.
Spock lies on a biobed as his green blood pumps through tubes. Next to him, Sarek is on the operating table. Mrs. Sarek watches.
Readings, nurse.
Mr. Spock's blood reduction rate is up over 200%. Sarek's heartbeat has risen to 324. Blood pressure 90 over 40, dropping.
I wish I knew whether that was good or bad. Initiate sterile field.
Spock starts to get up off the bed.
Mr. Spock.
Where do you think you're going?
I must see the captain.
My patients don't walk out in the middle of an operation.
An alien ship, I just realized if their power utilization curve is not the norm, it should be hostile. Identify them, sir. Important.
So is your father's life.
Nurse Chapel, who sedated Spock at McCoy's signal, walks calmly back to the operating table. Mrs. Sarek watches anxiously. In the brig, a guard searches Thelev, the Andorian's hair. Thelev attacks him, and a second guard fells Thelev with his phaser. As Thelev's head hits the floor, one of his antennae snaps, and something falls out of it. The guards examine it, and one of them takes it to an intercom station.
Kirk here.
Security here. We had to stun the Andorian. He had some sort of transceiver. It was hidden in his antenna.
Captain, the alien ship has changed course and speed, moving directly toward us at warp 8.
Bring the prisoner to the bridge. Reflectors on. Red alert. Phaser, stand by to fire on my order.
Aye, sir. Shields on. Phasers, manned and ready, sir.
Check out. Take over Spock scanners.
Aye, sir.
Kirk winces with pain. On the view screen, the unidentified vessel hurtles past the Enterprise. In the operating theater, everything shakes. McCoy glances at Nurse Chapel.
Target, Mr. Chekov.
Moving away. Turn him now. He's coming around again.
Fire as he passes, Ensign.
Clean miss, sir.
Report on his weaponry, Mr. Chekov.
Sensors record standard phaser, sir.
Standard phasers. Good. They may have more speed, but they're not giants.
Captain, the intercoms are jammed. All the ambassadors are asking what's going on.
Tell them to take a good guess, but clear that board, Lieutenant.
Aye, sir.
He's coming around again.
In sick bay.
One more like that, and I'm going to lose both of these men.
The alien vessel makes another pass, and the bridge rocks.
Fire control locked into the computers, Captain.
On my order, fire photon torpedoes 2, 4, and 6. Widest possible scatter.
Aye, sir.
Fire.
Full speed, missed, sir. They're moving too fast for us.
The operating theater jolts. Nurse Chapel glances up.
Doctor, his heart stopped.
Cardiostimulate.
She presses a switch. On the other bed, Spock comes round. Nurse Chapel flicks a switch on the operating table.
The systems are off.
Well, then get me that old portable cardiostimulator.
Nurse Chapel fetches it for him.
Call engineering and have sickbay systems put on priority.
Yes, sir.
Spock's wife watches anxiously.
Number four shield is buckled, sir.
Auxiliary power.
Switching over. Shield's firming up. Number four is still weak, sir. If they hit us there again, it'll go altogether.
McCoy's hands work beneath the operating table cover. He looks up at the bioscreen. The heart monitor has started to pulse again. Thelev, the assassin, is brought onto the bridge. The guards release him, and he looks around with curiosity as he steps down to the captain's chair.
Friends out there are good. They'll have to destroy this ship to win.
That was intended from the beginning, Captain.
You're not Andorian. Who are you?
Damage reports coming in, Captain. Every deck.
Damage control procedures. All decks. The ship out there has phasers. At least our weapons are alike.
Number two shield is gone, sir.
Engineering, this is the captain. Cut power on the port side except for phaser banks.
The lights dim.
At my signal, cut starboard power. Kirk out. Who are you?
Find your own answers, Captain. You haven't long to live.
You're a spy, surgically altered to pass as an Andorian, planted in the ambassador's party to use terror and murder to disrupt us and prepare for this attack.
Speculation, Captain.
Engineering, cut power on starboard side. Maintain until further orders.
More lights dim on the bridge.
Chekhov.
Chekhov comes down to the con and relieves the navigator. The Andorian imposter standing beside Kirk watches with growing anxiety.
What are you doing?
You speculate.
We're starting to drift, sir. Shall I hold her on course?
No. Stand by your phasers, Mr. Chekhov.
Aye, sir. Phasers standing by.
The Enterprise drifts in space.
It's just hovering out there, sir.
Looking us over. We're dead as far as he knows.
You're baiting him. You're trying to lure him in.
Here he comes.
The golden spinning starship approaches the Enterprise.
Range decreasing. Speed dropping close to sublight.
Hold your fire, Mr. Chekhov.
Laser is locked on target. Range closing. 75,000 kilometers.
Fire.
Two white beams shoot out from the saucer-shaped main hull. There's a flash of light from the alien vessel.
Got him!
The imposter's face crumples. Kirk thumps the intercom button on the arm of his chair.
Secure from general quarters. Lieutenant, open the hailing frequency. If they wish to surrender.
Everyone shields their eyes as a blinding flash of white light fills the view screen.
They could not surrender, Captain. They had orders to self-destruct.
In the operating theater, all the indicators on the biomonitor start to pick up. Spock, watching from the next bed, closes his eyes and sinks back into the pillow with a look of relief. On the bridge, Kirk goes over to Lieutenant Uhura.
Lieutenant, relay to Starfleet Command. Tell them we have a prisoner.
Aye, sir.
Only temporarily, Captain. You see, I had orders to self-destruct, too. Slow poison. Quite painless, actually, but there's no known antidote. I anticipate another 10 minutes of
life. Take him to sick bay.
I seem to have miscalculated.
He collapses. Kirk glances at the forward view screen.
So did they.
Clutching his arm, he goes towards the lift.
Mr. Chekhov, take over.
Kirk comes into sick bay.
Bones. Are you quite through shaking the ship around?
Spock, Sark, how are they?
Well, I don't mind telling you, you sure make it difficult for a surgeon trying to...
Bones!
Captain, come in.
They follow Mrs. Sarek to the next room where Spock and Sarek are in adjoining beds. McCoy grins.
That big-headed Vulcan stamina. I couldn't have pulled him through without it.
Some doctors have all the luck.
Captain, I believe you'll find the alien...
We damaged the ship. They destroy themselves to avoid capture. Bones, Thelov's body will be brought to your lab on an autopsy performed as soon as possible.
I think you'll find he's an Orion, Doctor.
Orion?
Intelligence reports that Orion smugglers have been raiding the Corridan system.
But what would they gain by an attack on Starfleet?
Mutual suspicion and interplanetary war.
Yes, of course, with Orion carefully neutral. They'd clean up by supplying dilithium to both sides and continue to raid Corridan.
The thing that confused me was the power utilization curve. It made them seem more powerful than a starship or anything known to us. That ship was constructed for a suicide mission. Since they never intended to return to their home base, they could use 100% power on their attacks. The thing I don't understand is why I didn't think of it earlier.
You might have had something else on your mind.
Spock raises his eyebrows.
It hardly seems likely.
No, but thank you anyway.
And you, Sarek, would you also say thank you to your son?
I don't understand.
For saving your life.
Sarek looks puzzled.
Spock acted in the only logical manner open to him. One does not thank logic, Amanda.
Logic? Logic? I'm sick to death of logic. Do you want to know how I feel about your logic?
Emotional, isn't she?
She has always been that way.
Indeed. Why did you marry her?
At the time, it seemed the logical thing to do.
Spock purses his lips and nods. Sarek offers his wife his hand. Kirk staggers.
If you keep arguing with your kindly family doctor, you're going to spend your next 10 days right here. If you cooperate, you'll be out in 2.
Doctor, I think I'll return to my station now.
You are at your station, Mr. Spock.
Dr. McCoy, I believe you're enjoying all this.
Indeed, Captain. I've never seen him look so happy.
Shut up!
Kirk raises a finger. Meekly, Kirk lowers his finger and puts his head back on the pillow. McCoy looks at Spock and Kirk, and his crabby face breaks into a smile.
Well, what do you know? I finally got the last word.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.